Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Next of Kin, A Foster Guardian's Romance by Hannah Bonham Young, narrated by Penelope Ann Rose. Chapter 1. My phone rings, flashing a number that immediately sends a chill down my spine. I follow my instincts, ditching my cart and spot in the checkout line to find quiet in the grocery store's bathroom, which is thankfully empty. Hello, this is Chloe. My voice is already shaking. Hi, Chloe, this is Rachel Farreau calling from Child Protective Services. Is this a good time to talk? I close the toilet stall and lock it behind me as an all-too-familiar feeling of dread creeps into my chest. I paw at my collarbone with my free hand. A nervous rash is most likely already spreading. Sure. Connie. It has to be Connie. She's hurt or worse. Why else would CPS call? I haven't heard from a social worker in over 6 years. Okay, great. Rachel clears her throat, then seems to brace herself with a deep inhale. In your file, it states that you're open to your birth mother contacting you. Is that still accurate?
Do I want to know?
Yes. It is sort of an unusual call, I suppose. Your mother... Sorry, Constance. Constance has put in an urgent request that you visit her. She's at the hospital. My body goes entirely still, and the blood pumps slower in my veins. As much as I have tried to distance myself from her, the need for Connie to be okay still sits lodged in my throat. She has just, entirely unexpectedly, given birth. I'm sorry, what? I fight for my next breath. Your mother had a baby. My palm hits the stall's wall before my back does, and I slide down to sit on the floor. I'll burn these clothes later. No, that, but, what? I understand that it must be a lot to process. I wish there was a way for me to deliver this news. It wouldn't give such a shock. I know that it's been over 10 years since you have seen or heard from your mother. That is not entirely true. There were plenty of times in high school when she showed up without my adoptive parents' permission, and I never told. Is Connie okay? Yes, she's fine. A colleague of mine is with her right now. The baby was premature. The doctor who called us earlier said they will make a full recovery, probably after a 2 or 3 month NICU stay. The baby will not be placed with your mother. We are looking into different care options. Colleague, placed. Care? Social workers are all over this. Why would Connie want to see me? Wouldn't she understand how messed up that is? To need me while she sends another kid into foster care? No, not just another kid, my sibling. She clears her throat. Constance has listed you as a possible caregiver. She's willing to sign over her parental rights to you. If not, the baby, after making a full recovery, will be placed in foster care. I pull the phone away from my face and stare blankly at the screen for a moment. I must have a bad signal or be imagining this entirely. A possible caregiver? For a baby? Me? But I'm 24. I'm not sure why that's the thought that escapes me when there are about 2,000 others bouncing around my head, but for whatever reason, it's what comes out. 24, recently graduated, no idea what I'm doing. Hell! I had been crossing my fingers that my bank card wouldn't be declined for my groceries. Chloe, I understand that this is a lot to ask of you, especially considering your distant relationship with your birth mother. However, it's only appropriate that we follow up with each possible contact she provides. You have every right to say no, and there could be visitation options with your sibling if you were to want that. I gasp softly as an undeniable rush of joy curves my lips into a smile. Another thought breaking through the heavy silence. I have a sibling. I'd have given anything for a sibling growing up. Someone familiar and known. Someone to love and be loved by unconditionally. Would I even be allowed? I ask hesitantly. If I wanted to. That would require a much larger conversation. One that may be best to have at my office. Yeah. Okay. There would be lots to discuss. I think, right now, we should just digest this news. Rachel's voice remains cool yet determined. Right. I pinch the bridge of my nose. My eyes are closed, but the room remains spinning. Constance is asking to see you regardless. Okay. I don't know if it's the prospect of seeing Connie or the thought that she chose not to reach out before now that causes my lips to tremble, but either way, they do. But to be perfectly clear, the choice is ultimately yours. Rachel's gentle confidence reassures me somewhat. Yeah. How about I give you the phone number of my colleague who is with Constance now? If you decide you want to see her, you can get the information from her. Then we can go from there, whatever you decide. My head aches and pounds, feeling like it would on a relentlessly humid day before a thunderstorm. After Rachel gives me her colleague's details, I hang up the phone and press it into the space between my eyes, focusing on that spot of slight discomfort. One I'm choosing to cause and not receive unwillingly, seems to help. I think of Connie, or at least the latest version of her I have in memory, and transfer that image to a hospital bed. Sympathy swells, despite my impulse to shut my emotions down and get out of this bathroom without causing a scene. I imagine the similarities between where she is now and the picture that used to sit on her bedside table. Our first photo together. Taken as she lay in a different hospital bed almost 25 years ago. She had been alone then, too, and only 17. My thoughts hold on my mother until an unwelcome memory rises to the top of the pile. I was 4 years old, waiting on an empty school bus that had already made a second loop back to my street. Sitting alone with the bus driver and my kindergarten teacher, I remember thinking that they both looked at me with the same expression my mom had when I'd fallen out of a tree a few days before. I asked myself why they did that. I wasn't hurt.
Mommy didn't mention any plans she had for today, Ms. Brown had asked me.
Nope, little me answered.
Do you know your grandma's phone number or where she might work?
I don't have a grandma. I have an uncle, but he lives on a big boat.
And your dad? Do you know your dad's name, sweetie?
Ms. Brown was making me nervous, and I wanted my mom. Mostly so I could show her the artwork I'd made and ask if I had a dad like my friend Sarah did. Sarah's dad seemed nice. Maybe, I had thought, he could be my dad too.
Nope, I answered.
Okay, all right. Well, I think you and I are going to go on a little adventure today. Would you like to see where Ms. Brown lives?
Don't you have a dog? I asked.
Yes, I do.
I don't like dogs. They're stinky.
Well, how about we put him outside and the two of us can play inside?
Ms. Brown had taken me back to her house for 2 hours before CPS workers arrived and placed me in emergency care. I've read in my file since, the one I was gifted on my 18th birthday, that the police tracked Connie down a few days later. She was high, drunk, and angry to have been found. I bounced around foster care for a year until my mom proved successful enough in her sobriety that I was able to move back in with her. I knew she had worked hard for that. Counselors, social workers, and teachers, they'd all told me how much my mom had worked to get me back. I've never understood why they needed to tell me that, as if any 5-year-old should be grateful to be with their own mother, as if I was a sobriety chip and not a human. When Connie relapsed 10 months later, my head was so filled up with forced gratitude that I felt worse for her than for myself. I should have been told I didn't deserve to eat nothing but dry Fruit Loops for 3 days straight, but I wasn't. Instead, I felt sad for her. I still do. Now she's brought another kid into this mess. Determination fills my chest, and I open my eyes, bringing myself back into the fluorescent-lit bathroom and into my adult body, that shakes as waves of nausea cause goosebumps to spread. I know that I need to go see my mother. I won't let my sibling go through what I did. I can't. Chapter 2. I step out of the toilet stall and wash my hands. Once I'm positive I have scrubbed every last piece of public bathroom off me, I bring some cold water to my face. The water droplets run down into the neck of my t-shirt as I lean over the sink, bracing myself with a firm grip on either side. Do not throw up in a grocery store bathroom. I look at my reflection in the clouded mirror resting above the basin.
My mother's eyes look back at me, deep green with amber flecks, thick, dark eyelashes, and even thicker eyebrows. The women in our family were built to battle the elements, carry children on our backs, live through famine, survive. Strong brows, strong noses, strong bodies, strong hearts. Connie has written that on each of my birthday cards, the year she remembered. I always thought it was a batshit crazy thing to write, but now the familiar sentiment is sort of nice. I became far less insecure about my soft-edged figure when I realized my body had evolved to hold weight and strength because of what my Polish lineage, on Connie's side, had to survive. My chestnut-brown hair is getting far too long, falling almost to the ends of my fingertips, but I like it that way, mostly because my adoptive mother would hate it. It's not practical. I tie it up now to allow my neck to breathe. Everything feels too close to my skin. Outside the grocery store bathroom, crowds of shoppers go about their days. Announcements on the overhead speaker include a promotion on paper towels. The beeps of the cash registers are steady and jarring. The smiles of the cashiers, plastered and polite. A woman uses a coupon on cat litter that gets her a whole 20 cents off. The world hasn't turned upside down for anyone else. I abandon my cart of groceries and make a mental note to never return to this store in case I was spotted doing so. There is frozen stuff in the cart, after all. I pass by a picture-perfect family entering the store as I leave. Two parents, two kids. They're giggling with one another. The dad makes a silly face at the little girl balancing on the end of the cart, holding on for dear life. I push down the resentment that threatens to burn its way up my throat and turn into tears. I envy them, deeply, in my gut. Finally, outside, I lean on the concrete wall of the building and take a much-needed breath of the mid-June air. When I woke up this morning, my to-do list consisted of buying groceries, watching a documentary my father recommended, and possibly getting tipsy enough on wine to download yet another dating app. Now, bigger things to tackle. I pull out my phone to call Rachel's colleague.
Hello, this is Odette.
Hi, Odette. It's Chloe, Connie's daughter.
Oh, yes, Odette sings out. Hi, hon. Good to hear from you.
Her tone is so warm it builds an ache in my chest. The longing to be comforted by her is outweighed by my need to keep this day progressing forward at top speed. I need to remain a moving target. I was wondering if you could tell me where Connie is and how to see her.
Of course. Is this a mobile number? It may be best to text the details to you. Is that okay?
That would be great. Thanks.
Okay, hon. Talk soon. Odette says softly.
I copy the address of the hospital from Odette's text and paste it into the GPS on my phone. There is no way I'm paying for a cab ride across the city, but I also don't have any change for the bus. I'd go inside and use the ATM, but they could be waiting for the owner of the abandoned grocery cart to return or be getting to hang wanted posters, so I won't be doing that. I do have my expired student bus pass, however, given to me by my alma mater. It's only been 1 month since graduation. That has to count for something. Perhaps the pass is sort of like expired yogurt. You can still try it if you're too broke to afford more. Which I am. The bus driver waves me on without reading the fine print, thank God, and I take a seat towards the back next to a window. I shut down thoughts of where I'm headed, hoping to not add cried on public transport to today's list of achievements. The ride passes far too quickly. The back doors open to a crowded stop filled with scrub-wearing folks clamoring to get on. I make my way through them and up the ramp to the visitor entrance of the hospital. As I get into the empty elevator, it dawns on me that, prior to 90 minutes ago, I hadn't thought of Connie in a few weeks. Not since Mother's Day. The guilt comes in an unexpected and tsunami-sized wave. Without pausing, I frantically search the collection of buttons on the wall and push the emergency stop button. The elevator immediately halts. I place my hands around the base of my neck, applying pressure with my forearms against my chest, as my adoptive parents taught me when I was experiencing anxiety or what they affectionately called nerves. I haven't seen Connie for 6 years. I hadn't known if she was alive, though I always suspected I would feel it if she passed.
What do I say to her? Call her? Should I have stopped at the lobby gift shop first? Do you get flowers for the new mother who will be leaving alone?
Hello, is something wrong?
A muffled male voice comes through the elevator's speaker.
Shit. Oh, no, sorry. I pressed it accidentally, I stammer.
No problem.
The elevator hums and starts back up. Two floors later, I step off and follow the purple arrows on the floor to the maternity ward, per Odette's instruction. There is a phone on the wall hanging outside the entrance of locked double doors. A sticker next to it reads, "Inform the charge nurse who you are here to visit and wait for the doors to open." I pick it up, and it trills a few times before a rather crabby-sounding woman answers. "Hi, I'm here to see Constance Walden." I haven't said my pre-adoption surname out loud in a long time.
"One moment, please."
The line clicks, and the doors open slowly with a hum. I walk in and nod at the nurse at the front desk. She barely looks up as she points over her shoulder toward, presumably, Connie's room. "End of the hall on your left," another kinder nurse chimes in from behind, offering me a sympathetic grin.
"Thanks."
At this point, to keep me upright, my feet have to keep moving faster than my fears can grow. I knock three times, shifting my weight from one foot to the other, before a towering woman steps out. She is probably in her mid-60s, dressed in purple from head to toe, and has dreadlocks that rest past her shoulders. She has dark skin, painted on red cheeks, and kind eyes that she uses to look me up and down adoringly.
"Oh, Miss Chloe, look at you."
She clasps her hands in front of her face.
"I'm sure you don't remember me, but I have known your mother for a long time. We met when you were only 5 years old."
She lowers her hands and holds one palm out for me to take, which I do willingly.
"It's so nice to see you again, my dear, though I wish it was under different circumstances."
We both let go. I do remember her, or her kind eyes at least, and I feel a little safer for it.
"It's nice to see you again, Odette."
I force out a smile and she puts one hand on my shoulder, the comfort of which almost sends me into a fit of tears. I resist.
"How are you holding up?"
"Weird morning." My voice, despite my efforts, has no ease to it.
I can believe that," she says. "Well, hon, I'm here to be your mama's friend right now. Is it okay if I call her your mama?"
I shrug, but before I speak, she continues. "Connie and I have kept in touch over the years, when she's doing well. I've helped her with rehabilitation programs, a sponsorship group, things like that. Mostly, I try to be a listening ear. Before last night, when she asked me here, I hadn't heard from her in 2 years. The hospital staff had been less than friendly. She hadn't even seen the baby before I got here this morning. Connie..." She stops speaking, exhales, and rubs her eye with a closed fist. "Connie had gone into the ER complaining of stomach pains. She was drunk. They discovered she was in active labor, and they performed a C-section. She hadn't known she was pregnant." Odette's face turns solemn. "I'm a children's support worker, but the hat I'm wearing through this door is Connie's friend first. I want to be clear, sweet girl, that I know she has made many mistakes. I know they have impacted you greatly, but she is having a hard time, and we need to be as compassionate as we can be right now."
Guilt wraps tightly around my heart as it beats a little faster.
"Understood." I swallow thickly.
"Okay, hon. You ready to go in?"
I hesitate to ask, but I have to know before my feet will move me.
Is the baby in there?"
"No. She's in the neonatal intensive care unit. She's safe."
"I have a sister."
"Can I see her?" I ask with trepidation. "After?" Odette's brow furrows, and she nods a few times.
"Sure, hon."
I press my mouth into a hard line and adjust myself to stand straighter, inhaling deeply.
"Okay, I'm ready."
Chapter 3.
"Miss Connie, I have someone here for you."
Odette pulls back the curtain wrapped around the hospital bed in the otherwise empty room.
"Chloe has come to visit."
I blink at the person lying in front of me. This woman shares almost no recognizable features with the mother I remember. Connie's face is hollow, with under eyes that are almost black. Her lips are cracked and dry, and her hair is no longer dark brown like mine, but bleach blonde and fraying. If I saw her on the street, I wouldn't have thought twice as I passed her by. Maybe I have. A tear falls onto my cheek, but I wipe it away before Odette or Connie sees it. Hello. I sincerely cannot think of any other word to say. Connie looks me up and down, face neutral, shrinking me to 2 feet tall. Even now, as she looks like this, I still crave her approval.
You really came.
Her voice is more familiar than her face, but gruff. She wipes her nose with the back of her forearm. I did. All my energy is concentrated on keeping my tone and expression neutral.
Well, good.
Connie already sounds annoyed. Off to a great start. I look towards Odette, and she takes my cue.
Connie, Chloe has agreed to visit you out of the kindness of her heart. We talked about this, my dear. I know you're grateful for her to have come.
The woman in the bed nods, looking between Odette and me rapidly. Her movements gain momentum as the emotional energy in the room shifts to an unpredictable intensity.
So this is a part, huh? The part where you two team up on me, mock me, dismiss me? Well, dear,
she spits this word back at Odette.
Don't forget that I made her.
She gestures to me with a limp wrist.
I know how to talk to her.
You asked for me? I step in front of Odette, shielding her as best as I can, though my height does little to hide her broad shoulders and towering figure.
Yeah,
she leans back, calming her body down physically, but her eyes remain wild.
I didn't know.
She looks at her lap, wringing her hands.
I didn't know I was pregnant. I didn't know. I wouldn't have done it again.
But you have. The harsh reply escapes me before I think to take Odette's words of caution. Connie's face falls, looking like a scorned child. How can someone so physically worn look so young?
Yeah, I have.
The room stills, the tension lowering. Odette glides over to the chair sitting next to the bed and gestures for me to sit with her, and I do.
Why don't you tell Chloe why you've asked her here?
Connie doesn't look up, but shakes her head. Connie. Odette reaches for her hand.
She came. It's your turn now.
Chloe, baby. My mother's voice shifts to the tone I remember.
I'm so sorry.
Her lips tremble, but no tears appear. I nod and cautiously raise my hand before deciding where it's safest to rest. I choose her knee that's covered by a thin hospital sheet.
I don't want her to go through what you did. I couldn't live with myself if...
Odette interrupts.
Let's try to keep all expectations manageable and free from guilt.
She raises an eyebrow at Connie, a reminder, it seems.
I want you to take the baby until I can get clean. I know you're still so young, but...
She looks up towards me, tears in her eyes.
You're you. You're way more responsible than I have ever been.
I lean back in my chair. My hand moves to my knee instead. Because I had to be, I say.
Yeah, I guess so,
she whispers. I look to Odette, who, despite having no idea what I planned to say, gives me an encouraging nod. I straighten and rock back and forth until the motion comforts me enough to speak.
I'll do it, but only if you promise to give up custody completely.
I turn towards Odette. That's what Rachel said on the phone. Odette purses her lips. I lick my lips before speaking. I'll do it, if I even can. I don't know if I'll be allowed, but you won't get custody again. You can visit with her when you're sober. You can see her often when you are, but she is not going to live with you, ever. Do you understand? My voice pitches louder with the last question, and I regret it immediately. Connie wipes a single tear away, but the look on her face is one of accepted defeat instead of hurt.
I jump on the defensive. They may not let me, I don't know. I just finished school, I have tons of student loans, and started freelancing less than a month ago. I'm living alone right now, I can't move home.
No need to add, my adoptive parents left the country and we don't really speak anymore.
Odette speaks up. But we appreciate your willingness to try.
I offer an awkward but appreciative smile. I look back towards Connie and study her for a moment, my heart filling with worry.
I really hope things turn around for you.
She fumbles to gather a tighter hold on Odette's hand.
Me too, Connie whispers.
We sit in awkward silence until Odette stands and gracefully turns to me.
Chloe, would you like to go meet your sister?
I nod, rising to stand next to her. I move away from the hospital bed and around the back of the chair I'd been sitting in. I choose to give a parting gift to Connie.
Good to see you, Mom.
She reaches for my hand, and I gently touch the back of hers before tensing and moving away.
Goodbye, I say.
I follow Odette into the hallway. She places a hand on my back after shutting the door. I blankly look off to the white walls with metal panels across the hall as she uses a heavy palm to pat me.
No rush, hun.
I smile weakly over my shoulder to Odette, who stands behind me. She continues her soothing motions as I catch my breath and unclench my jaw.
Who was that woman?
Sober or not, my mother has always looked like herself, warm, familiar, like me. Now I'm perhaps the only version of who my mother used to be that's left in this world. She's a stranger now, in all ways. A stranger my heart breaks for. A stranger I still need the approval of, love from. But I will have to settle for trust. The trust she is giving me to look after my sister.
Chapter 4.
Odette leads me back past the elevators and towards the NICU. Eventually, we arrive at another entryway with a video camera above the door. Whoever is watching must have noticed Odette is wearing a visitor's pass around her neck, since the door is open before she reaches for the phone on the wall. She waves politely at the nurse's station as we pass, going towards a dimly lit hallway. I feel out of place here, like I'm trespassing in someone else's life. I make an effort to not look into the rooms with other families. I'm glad Odette walks with such force, otherwise, I may turn and run. Odette slows, nearing the end of the hall. A man wearing blue scrubs, the same as the nurses at the front desk, sits at a computer in an alcove outside the room. He's facing a large window, which looks into one of the many private suites. From where we stop in the hallway, I can look through it to see an incubator with a dual monitor stand towering above it. Odette clears her throat, and the nurse looks towards us as he switches off the computer he'd been typing on. He stands and reaches out a hand to shake with Odette and then me.
Hi, I'm Calvin. I'm looking after baby Walden this afternoon. I'll be here till 7.
Calvin is probably a few inches taller than me and has olive-toned skin and dark hair and eyes. He reminds me of a classic World War II soldier, short in stature but strong-looking with broad muscles in his upper body, a wide stance, and coiffed black hair.
Hi, Calvin. This is Chloe, baby girl's older sister, and I'm Odette from CPS.
Something beeps, and I turn to look at the monitors, trying to decipher what any of it means.
Good to meet you both.
Calvin steps beside me and points towards the window.
The top line is her heart rate, the middle is her oxygenation level, the last is the feeding tube's input.
I nod. The other screen is a baby monitor, a live feed of my sister. My sister.
If you have any questions, don't hesitate. It can be really overwhelming. There are a lot of beeps and alarms and wires, but it all looks far worse than it actually is.
I smile at him through the fog of my overstimulation. He has clearly given this speech thousands of times, but I do find myself settling at the sight ahead of me. I can barely make out the shape of a baby under each wire, bandage, and wrap.
Let's go inside.
Odette reaches for the glass sliding door. What's her name? I blurt. Odette doesn't slow as she opens the door and guides me in with a steady hand on the small of my back.
No name yet.
I walk over and look down at the incubator. Her tiny body is nearly transparent. She has a monitor on her right foot, which is sticking out from under a blanket.
I love her little toes. Oh my goodness,
Odette coos from behind me. I agree, but fail to speak or move closer. I didn't know humans could be so small. I feel worried just looking at her. An alarm sounds.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?